The podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 37 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. Today is August 25th, 2016, and from Denver, Colorado, I'm John Horseman, and with me, of course, is the crew. First, you may know her as the only serious Overwatch player on this podcast, and just all around, sorry, I'm not supposed to say that, I'll have to edit that out. It's Rosh. Hey, Rosh, PG welcome to the rating. Show.
Hi. Thanks for the entrance.
I know, it was really good, wasn't it? Well, next up from Camarillo, California, it's Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
It's good to be back. I've been playing a bit of Overwatch, and I'm excited to talk about these changes going into the game. So, yeah.
Amazing. We do have an incredible show, but last but not least, apparently we're going to sunny Canada with Kevin Hobbistad. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Yeah, actually nice out here. A little bit of sun for a change, but we've got some crazy, crazy stuff going on in the world of Overwatch. Competitive scene is lit up, and I think I particularly am interested to hear what you guys have to say. Not so much you, John, but like Brosh, maybe a little bit about what's going on in the competitive scene. Oh, what is that? Is that new?
That's new.
New buttons.
That's amazing. That's new. I'm not even mad.
I have these two set up just for Rosh and Kevin. I have.
Well, that just happened.
And
rest in pieces.
So between those, nice. I feel like perfect. I should be
all right.
The burn unit is on the side here. We're all ready to go.
You get a point for that one. Well done.
Yeah, that was great.
Thanks. Well, let's just jump into the news.
This week in Overwatch.
Wouldn't be a show without a couple technical issues, but we do have quite a bit to talk about this week in Overwatch. First, we had the Atlantic Showdown Championships at Gamescom this last week, and it was pretty amazing. Rosh, did you get a chance to keep up to date with this one?
I did. It was pretty cool because I think it was one of the first tournaments that I've seen where the production value was just super well done. So it was actually really cool to watch because at the beginning when they started showing the like Gosu game tournaments and stuff like that, that was one thing I didn't like, how they were showing the characters and the matches. And I think that they're getting a lot better. And with this tournament in specific, the casting was great. The production was great. How they were playing replays of maps and moments and battles that happened and how they were switching characters, it all seemed a lot better. So production value speaking, it was really cool. And then just the matches were insane. I mean, yeah. Let's just talk about Envious and their 57 game win streak. And how that is no longer a thing because of Rogue. Like, who would have thought that? Who could have imagined? I mean, John is just out of his world.
I play on console. I play on console. I don't even know.
He has no idea what esports is.
What's an esport? Is that like a new computer?
That is true. Yeah. You have to not be like a console club to understand. That's okay. We'll explain it for you, though. It's okay. That's all right.
Rest in peace.
Every time I get a slam, that's just going right in.
So basically, Envious, their 57 win streak, they went up against Rogue and it came down to a best of five. And the final round was a King of the Hill which in turn is another best of five. So we got a lot of good matches from the two. And the King of the Hill for their fifth match for the placements went to the fifth round, of course, esports. And it was great. Tveek played an amazing Genji on Rogue side, and I definitely think that's what carried Rogue to be so victorious and so successful. But then they seemed to kind of stutter in the King of the Hill because they wouldn't switch comps. They ran Zarya, Lucio, Genji, Monkey, Zen, Tracer for four of the rounds.
You mean scientist, and then went two right? And two. You mean scientist.
He's not a monkey. He's a scientist. I'm sorry. Okay, oh, Winston, our scientist. And so basically what happened is they ran the same comp for four rounds, and finally they get to best of five. It's 2-2. And everybody's wondering, is Rogue going to switch up the comp? Are they going to keep just trying to like push this comp and win with it because they've practiced it? They really need to do this, because what was happening is Envious is their Winston, their scientist. They were able to get into Rogue's backline and disrupt the Zenyatta because Rogue didn't have a Reaper. They hadn't had a Reaper all five matches. And so that's really where they struggled, was not being able to counter Envious's comp. And then finally, in the fifth round, they switched to a McCree. Their Genji switched to a McCree. And everybody was like, okay, well, finally a switch, finally a switch. And then they were able to take it, and it was a hard-fought battle. And at the very end, I don't know which player it was, but it hadn't ended yet. There was Envious's Zarya was standing on the back line of the map. And Rogue thought that they won, and so he took off his headset and he got up to celebrate. And then the Zarya stepped in and triggered overtime, and he was like, he had to rush to put his headset back on and get back into the game. And it was pretty funny, but Rogue came out on top and just blew everybody's minds. I think that was the best match, even the very finals. I think that was the match, just because Envious was 57-0. That's huge.
Yeah.
It was a good tournament.
It was an amazing tournament. It was really fun to watch. The gaps were a little bit long, which is something I noticed. They haven't figured that out. It took Hearthstone like 8 months before they could figure out how to do games faster and go kind of back to back to back.
I wouldn't even say it's figured out yet for Hearthstone. But I mean,
it's the fastest it's ever been. They can turn those
around. Hearthstone is pretty fast.
Yeah, they can turn it around in 1 to 2 minutes, whereas in Overwatch, it's like 5-10 minutes every time.
You have
time.
To think. You have 12 people switching up computers.
No, well, I didn't think about thinking, Jimmy. Jeez.
I'm just trying to explain it to the viewers who may not understand all the technical side of everything.
Go ahead. You're right. There's very good reasons for it, right? It's not like they're like, let's do 5 minutes of staring at a scoreboard screen because our guys need water and then go to the bathroom and then get some more water before they can go to the bathroom again. And then we can start. It's because you're right. Tech issues. They're also doing choosing maps. They're strategizing. They're communicating between games. There's a lot going on there. It was something that the downtime was a little excessive, and sometimes they had commentary in between, but you can only talk about so much sometime. And
yeah, there were a couple points where it was kind of getting a little cringy. They were just trying to like grab at straws for stuff to talk about. So I think that that's definitely something that they can improve. But I mean, if you really think about it, how many tournaments have there been at that kind of level? I think for that they're not
maybe.
Being it. Yeah, exactly. I think that they did pretty well for it being one of the first tournaments at that level. So I definitely think they'll be able to improve. They've shown massive improvements from the very first like local tournament that was ever aired on Twitch for Overwatch. Just milestones have been achieved improving that. So I think it'll be good, really good for moving on. They'll be able to fix it.
Totally.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of big takeaways here, I think, for people, right? Obviously, crazy to see Rogue do as well as they did and knock Envy off the pedestal, which I'm just going to say, because I know everybody's kind of thinking it, I don't think Envy is down and out. Like, I do not think this means you're not going to see Envy win the next major tournament. I think they're still probably the best team on the planet.
Easily.
I don't think there's any doubt.
I was going to say the same thing. A 57 win streak is nothing to just, like, blow over there. Team consistency is so huge in esports. So if you can get that down, which is exactly what Envious has, they're definitely going to be a contender for top three for the next multiple tournaments. They're not going anywhere.
Well, I mean, to give you an impression, right? They're already through flawlessly, no losses, to the next stage, right? To the playoff stage of the E-League tournament, right? The Overwatch Open. So it's not like they've lost their luster. They got edged out very narrowly by Rogue in that semifinal game. So I think that's a big thing. I'm actually more surprised, truthfully, in the Atlantic showdown by watching Cloud9 just kind of get rolled over, considering how strong. Well, but they looked so good, right? They looked so good originally. And now it's like you watch them play and you think, like, I mean, I love Surefour. And I don't know what's going on. It's hard to watch.
Sorry, I meant Dignitas there. Yeah, but Dignitas just 0-4'd out of the tournament.
Oh, yeah. Dignitas had the worst record of anybody.
Yeah. No, I remember. I watched that series against Envy and just Envy wiped the floor with them. It was, not even close. Like,
but
wow, yeah.
It's not even losing matches. Like, they don't lose games, right? Like, that's what we were just talking about. Like, a game or this a team that doesn't lose. Right? Sorry, I was talking about Envy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. They don't even lose maps, let alone.
Right.
But yeah, if you didn't get to check it out, I would definitely recommend Blizzard put up two videos of the both days of the tournament in highlights, and those are really fun to watch, and they're really giving you an idea of how the tournament went, and the observing, I have to say, looked super good from what I did get to see, and a huge shout out to Flo for transitioning from StarCraft. I've been doing StarCraft observing for a while to observing Overwatch, which is a totally different like transition of thought. Like, that looked really good.
So can I say,
go ahead.
Okay. Before we get off this, I do want to say, yes, Rosh was right. Production value is right up there. Casting was the best it's ever been. But I do think it's worth pointing out that it still feels like this game needs a more refined spectator experience. It's still, in my mind, especially if you're not intimately familiar with the game or the maps, it's very difficult to watch. Like, it doesn't have that same production feel of watching something. Not that the game doesn't look great, but I compare it to watching other shooters. Okay, if I sit down and I watch like a CSGO major, right? It's very apparent what's going on because the pace is a little bit slower. You've got the map and sort of that overhead view where you get a little bit more perspective. And Overwatch, like, at best, we're getting the occasional kind of third person zoomed out, but you don't have the same refined camera controls, the same points on the map to actually provide perspective. It still feels a little rough to me. And that's the one thing I think needs to get better still.
I agree. I think that that's something that Overwatch specifically and Blizzard specifically has to work with the tournaments, though, is I don't know if that's something that they have to put into their game, some kind of coding that you can get different angles for the tournaments. I don't know how it works with how you're recording visually a tournament. I don't know if they have to add something into the game to let you be able to view it as a different angle that's not in the game already. But there's, I don't know what it is, but there's something there that just needs to be added that it's just lacking. Like Kevin said, compared to a CSGO tournament, there's not the same, you don't get the same visuals that you do in Overwatch as you do a CSGO tournament. And I think that that's the little oomph that they're missing that will make the tournament more interesting to watch and more involved with it.
Something
it would push it over the top.
Poor
go
John.
Ahead, John.
I'm just going to
get a word in edgewise. Go ahead.
I'm just going to push the buttons over here. That's all right. We're okay.
No, what do you got for us?
The only thing I wanted to say is, holy crap, live.playoverwatch.com.
Yeah, that was an awesome experience.
That was great.
I really hope they carry forward with that and do it with the other games, right? Like, make it more accessible, embed it better. Honestly, get that stream pumped into the Battle.net client. Like, do everything, because we're so close to Blizzard having the most, like, accessible, unified esports platform of any developer of any game. And Overwatch positioned right now to be enormous, to knock maybe every other game off of that number one spot, especially with, and I won't get into it because it's an Overwatch podcast, but all the league drama that's going on right now.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about it.
There's definitely a chance, though, for Overwatch to
Overwatch
to
could overcome. Be the game. It could be the single biggest esport on the planet a year from now, but it needs these little touches. Yeah,
just the little tiny things.
So I'm excited to see what sponsors step up and really start supporting the Overwatch scene, because it's obvious that it's not just a flash in the pan and it's here to stay, I feel like.
Right.
Or when you look at the orgs that are trying to get involved, like, yeah, it's going to be nuts. Don, honey, did you have something to say?
No, apparently. Just forget me right now. Dang. All I was going to say, so for those who are like, what the heck is live.playoverwatch.com? So when you went to that website, you would have the stream up like normal. On the right-hand side, you would have a chat, but you'd also have the games that have been played in the store, in the score of those games or matches. And then you also have the upcoming matches. When they would put out polls and stuff like that, it would pop right up. And then in real time, it would be tracking it on the stream, which was really great. So it was just a really immersive experience. You didn't feel like, I have no idea what's going on unless they go to Liquipedia and try to find the bracket, which is sometimes out of date, or on the website that's hosting the tournament, which is sometimes out of date. It's right there for you. It's updated in real time. It was super responsive with how they were doing that. You were able to interact with the stream beyond just chatting. Like, it was the first time that I've truly sat down and gone like, this is a really cool experience. Now, my esports viewing experiences are pretty much limited to MLG and Hearthstone. And while those are really great, really great esports games, they haven't done a whole lot there. I don't know if League or Dota does something more amazing than that. I'm sure Kevin can chime in on what they're doing there, but I just really enjoyed that experience. I actually wanted to sit down and just watch that and interact and see what's coming up rather than put it on a second monitor and just kind of try to keep tabs on it.
Yeah. So just so like, if you didn't get a chance to watch it live, the VOD won't represent what John is talking about right now, but live.playoverwatch.com uses a tool called Maestro, and it's basically an integrated tool that can take streams from Twitch or YouTube or any other streaming service that exists and integrate anything you might be able to think of. From social media to, you know, stuff like Reddit and RSS to things like on-stream polls and all that kind of stuff that they could do that was very interactive, right down to, and this is not something that's happened yet, but if there were a live event, like if you were watching this Atlantic Showdown and there was like another event that was tied to it, they'd probably just pop up like the Ticketmaster right on screen here, buy tickets to the live event. Like, it's a very powerful thing and it's a really wicked experience. Like, if you've never watched a live esports event through a service like this, it'll change your life. Like, live.playoverwatch.com will be a totally different thing than what you're used to from basically anything else that you've watched for Blizzard's esports up to this point. And I hope that, I mean, I just want to see this go broader. I want to see Blizzard do more stuff like that for their other games and continue to expand on this, because it's been so incredible. Visually, it was probably the best presented Blizzard esports thing I've watched online ever.
Wow.
Yeah, I was worried at first when Overwatch came out. You know, it goes through, because I use Twitch as my thing for seeing what games, because you can look at the channels and you can look at the games and it shows you the most popular games being played. And you always have the games that come out, and for the first weekend, they're on number 2 played, number 3 played. That's how many people are streaming and watching it. And at first I was like, okay, Overwatch is staying up there. Wow, it's still up there. It's still in the top 4. It's still there. But I was kind of worried with how the tournaments were shown and how they were shown to the public and how they were casted and all that. I was worried that they weren't going to be able to really get how to do that and to make it really immersive for the audience, because like all of you have said, it's hard to get into it. There's so much going on that if you don't know what you're watching, like when I started watching CSGO, I was instantly drawn into it because I knew exactly what was going on, the camera angles and all of that. So at first I was worried, but this gives me hope with the tournament, the Atlantic tournament, that it's definitely the tournaments and the esport factor of it. I definitely are going to be a permanent thing. That's not going to go away anytime soon. I think it's going to be something that we're seeing for a long, long time, and that excites me.
Yeah, and I think you'll see just as much quality out of the Overwatch Open. So if you're not already following, or if you missed out maybe on the Atlantic Showdown, keep tabs on the Overwatch Open. You'll be able to watch that likely through the same service once they get past the initial group stages, and it's going to be as big, if not bigger, overall over the course of the next month.
So one other thing I wanted to put out for those of you trying to find better ways to watch and keep caught up with Overwatch and Overwatch tournaments, I actually connected with a pretty cool website this last week, esportsred.com. This is really cool with these. It's two brothers. And basically what they created is they grab all the Twitch VODs, but they have hot links built into their website to go from match to match to match to match. So you can just hit next, 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 grand finals, whatever. So you can kind of watch. For Overwatch, it's pretty helpful. For Hearthstone, it was invaluable because you're talking about sometimes 50, 60 games played in a day sometimes, and being able to quickly go next, next, next. Ooh, this is an interesting matchup. I'm going to stay and watch this. Next, next, next was amazing. So we didn't talk about this. I don't know if I'm saying anything about it on the show, but esportsred.com, if you guys want to play around, they're all in beta. It's like a proof of concept type thing, but it was really cool if you're looking for a way to talk about that. All right. Can we go on?
Move on.
Yeah.
Rosh, I hear that you're having some XP problems over there on the PTR.
Oh gosh, I wrote out an entire thing because of just how bitter I was, and I needed some way to get my anger out other than the forums, because we all know how the Blizzard forums are. If you have not been playing the PTR, that is okay, because supports have been having this issue since day one of the beta, day one of the release, the final day of season one, and still in PTR. If you are a support, do not expect to get as much XP or ranked experience, I guess I should say, to clarify, as your DPS friends. For example, you're queuing with five other people, your placement matches. None of you have done any placement matches. You do all 10 together. You go 10-0. You destroyed people. You're so looking forward to getting in after the placement matches and building up to master and grandmaster, except wait. Your DPS are over 500 points higher than you because of the way the ranked system set them as, and you can no longer play with the people that you've played the last 10 exact same placement matches together. And if anything drives me nuts about Overwatch and how it's set up, it's that right now. I specifically played with a friend. He started 200 points below me. By the end of the night, after having played the exact same matches, he was 50 points ahead of me. As a support and as playing a class that is absolutely required on every single match, I feel a little left out and I feel a little left behind that I can't keep up with my DPS friends. If the supports went on strike and no one played support, you would not have a ranked match. It would not be fun. So Blizzard, please hear me. Please change this. Give us, I don't know if you need to calculate it differently. I don't know if you need to calculate healing a little more strong than kills and damage on the DPS perspective, but please, based Blizzard God, even it out for us support mains. I'm crying here, please. So yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be taken
into consideration. It's why Kevin and I only play Reaper, basically, so we can get that mad XP. We're on Reaper names all day.
All day. It's funny, right? Because this is something that's pretty much exclusively unique to the way that the rank system works in Overwatch, right? So if Jimmy and I go and we go play heroes together, which we can't because we're not the same rank, we're too far apart to queue together. But if we could, right, we would have this problem never, because we would start playing and your point score moves up or down at a rate that's adjusted by a tiny fraction, right? It's like a 2.5% or less adjustment based on your personal rank or personal contribution. So if you're playing together with a friend and you're playing those games together in ranked play, your rank moves up or down at a consistent pace, right? Like, and Jimmy, back me up here. Like, this would never happen in Heroes, right? Literally.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Right. Okay. So it's 100% exclusive to how this rank system works in Overwatch. So I look at it and think Blizzard's trying to make it so that your personal contributions are weighted very heavily in how your rank is calculated. Because if you get someone on your team who's a meanie and just wants to jump off of cliffs all game or something, they're
to ruin
it. It shouldn't hurt you as much as it hurts them. And I understand all the things they're trying to solve with this, but honestly, statistically, what should be happening is that there shouldn't be ranked drift. If you queue together with someone, your gain or loss should be within a small increment of each other, right? If you were playing as a support with someone and they go up, and I'm making up numbers here, but if you go up by 20 points as the support player, your DPS carry player should not be going up by more than like 21, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not fair for the drift to be so substantial that, like the example you gave of starting 200 over somebody and ending the night 50 below them, that shouldn't be mathematically possible. And that's 100% has to be how they're weighting support contributions. They've just got to turn a dial and rate them higher, like bump them by 20%, whatever you got to do.
There can be, and I understand and I appreciate what Blizzard is trying to do here, because if someone is purposely throwing a match, I'm going to be bitter at the end of that game if that directly correlates to my ranking, even though it was not my fault. If I carried the match so hard as best as I could, maybe I lose a little less points than this guy that clearly just fed the team 30 deaths. And that's something that they take into consideration, is how many deaths you have. But the thing is, it shouldn't be as skewed as it is. Just like Kevin said, it shouldn't be that different. If you want to give, and this is coming from a support main, so I'm trying not to be biased. I understand that DPS feel like they do more. You're getting the kills. You're aiming. You're having to position yourself to stop other characters from ulting. Okay, if you want to give the DPS a little more points for a win, like 25 to my 20 in respect, or even 30 to my 20, that's fine. But the numbers that I'm seeing, and I'll give a direct example because we calculated the numbers. My friend got 80 points for the win. I got like 25. That's too much. There's no reason that should ever happen. And it's a win. I mean, we did fine. I rezzed when I needed to rezz. I healed the right people. We were able to push to the end. But that much of a difference is just too much. They've got to go back and they've got to tune it to where the weight for healing is heavier so that they can match the weight of how much DPS gets, because that it's just too much.
Well, thankfully we're still in the PTR. This is all in testing. Season 2 doesn't drop till September 6th, right?
Yes.
Does that sound right? So they've got
like
a week and a half to iterate on it. And there's no way that they won't. They've even talked about it on the forums.
Yeah, they said that, like, they were looking at the numbers.
So I'm not too worried, but they need to hear this kind of criticism for sure.
It's not even necessarily a criticism thing, because I think people are happy with the new ranked formula and being able to see the point gain and losses. Like, I think the system they've implemented is good. This is something that goes all the way back. Like, there's always been a problem with evaluating support contributions for everything in the game, from play of the match or game all the way through to gain and loss at the end of a game. And I think that's just a systemic issue that they are aware of. They've been aware of all along. And it's something they have to be very careful with, because you also don't want to tune things the other way, right? You don't want Rosh to pull away from DPS, because it could be a very precise thing. If you just weight the contributions of every action of a support by 10% more, all of a sudden the opposite problem might exist. Like, I respect that this is probably not an easy system to fix, given that they want each player to have an individual contribution assessed per game.
Yeah, for as complex as the algorithms, and think of how many different algorithms are going on in this game just for
so many
scoring and play of the game. Jeff
play
Kaplan,
of the game is huge.
In the Game Informer piece, was talking about a lot of the different things that they weigh for play of the game. They're like, we want a computer to line up and say the same thing that a group of casters would, and say that was the play of the game. That was the big point.
And there are dozens of variables that affect that. Dozens. Yeah.
It's super intense. And so I don't think As somebody who has played team-based shooters for a long time, I understand, especially in non-tournament play, the wanting to reward your strongest players. Like, that should feel good and do that, but sounds like they're doing it too much right now. We have so much more to talk about, so we're going to move on. But Blizzard, if you're hearing us, let's see those PTR changes soon. Rosh would really appreciate it. I can't handle her yelling at me anymore. It's terrifying.
Please.
So Overwatch heroes are going to be retired.
Nope.
Just aren't so, some of them
stretch? Sorry. Oh, did I stretch a one comment totally taken out of context? Is that what I just did there,
Overwatch
Kevin?
Overwatch forums.
You may have, yes. I thought you were talking about the fact that Soldier 76 is a retired character because he's no longer an active member of Overwatch. He retired from Overwatch, but
people stretch so matters. Much. Context matters. People. So
don't know what we're talking about. Jeff Kaplan made a single comment online about leaving the door open on being able to retire heroes. People lost their collective minds about this. And in the official interview in Game Informer with Kaplan, this was sort of a comment they had made. I don't think he's serious for a minute. I think he the back walk that he kind of had to do on the forums is indicative of the fact that this is not a serious consideration for the team right now.
What is it? He said that they weren't planning on doing it, but he made a "I left the door open" comment in case they ever wanted to look at it. But the main thing is, he said that they weren't planning on doing it. So how did it just get so lost in the Blizzard Overwatch forums that people lost their minds over it? I honestly think, if you guys have heard of No Man's Sky, which I'm sure everybody has because of the horrible reviews, what happened there? They said that they were going to do something, and then they didn't do it, and then they got ridiculed for it. And I think that that's might have been why he left the comment open. For any reason in the future they decide to retire any Overwatch human or characters, he doesn't want to get the backlash that No Man's Sky did, for example. So he said that they weren't planning on doing it, but he also left it for any reason in the future. If we do decide to, it's there. But again, we're not planning on doing it. So I don't know why people lost their minds for that.
So here's the exact quote, so everyone can understand the question and the context. So the question was, is there a possibility that as characters get added to the game, older ones could be retired from the roster? Jeff says, we would leave the door open to that. I think the fact that we chose the business model we did, that the game comes with all the heroes and we're giving you everything extra for free so far, allows us to retire a hero without feeling bad about it. But I think we have a long way to go before heroes will need to be. One of the nice things about our business model is that we're not dependent on releasing a new hero to keep development going. That means that we don't have the pressure to release heroes when it might not be the right decision for the game. We're able to release heroes when players are ready for something new or it's right for the meta to shift a little bit. We don't have to do it just because we're trying to push the business model forward. So that's his exact response to what he had said. He was very vague. Like, you can't say, no, we'll never do that, because if you do, then, well, have fun with No Man's Sky, to Rosh's point.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you say we won't ever, then you can put yourself into a little bit of a design hole. Maybe competitive mode does see some that are more difficult to balance with the new heroes that come out. Maybe they do see some get retired, like cards in Magic the Gathering get, you know, banned and things like that. Like, is that totally unforeseeable and impossible to happen? No. At the same time, do you know how many? I am at 58 of 62 or 61 collectible Reaper things. Okay. Do you know what?
So they can't
happened?
Retire Reaper.
Yeah. So they can't retire Reaper because I literally just disenchant. I have a magic disenchant button and I disenchant the things that I want. And that's just how it goes. So there's obviously that aspect. Like, can they remove them totally from the game? It would be very difficult. especially like quick play. Like, why would you do that? At the same time, could I see them maybe a rotation in competitive mode way down the road to keep things fresh?
Yeah.
Maybe, but I just don't think he wanted
to push himself into a corner.
We're so far away from that.
I want to hear what Jimmy has to say on this one, because Jimmy's kind of our resident heroes guy. He's playing and casting a game where there's more concern with volume of heroes and rotations and stuff. And I would think that the way that the game is being developed, all of these characters have specific stories. They're all very relevant to the game. They could solve that problem, Jimmy, probably with just picks and bans, couldn't they?
They could. I don't really see something like that coming to Overwatch necessarily, but I really would like to see like why people got so excited about this and upset about it. Like, I just don't see them really retiring heroes ever, to be quite honest, unless they decide to kill someone off in the story and then want to keep it.
I'm not ready for that.
Like that or something.
I'm not ready
for
that.
I don't know. That would be the only reason I could see them like removing somebody. But I mean, each hero is so unique in their toolkit. I don't see them doing it in the near future. And that's like at least the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, I think I agree with that. I don't understand. Like, they could introduce pick ban. They could introduce rotation. They could do any number of things. But it just feels like there's not any need to.
Back to your point about picks and bans, the problem we're starting to run into in Heroes, or were for a while, was there was not enough supports to really have so many picks and bans, because you could just pigeonhole both teams out of all the supports in the game. And if you give each team 2 bans here, you could literally have zero supports on the team. So it's because of the limited hero pool right now in Overwatch that I don't see that happening soon. In the future, yes, possibly. But that would be something that would come from the competitive community that felt like
it'd be balance-based. It's to the original point, just like one hero limit came about, not because it's necessarily the most fun way to play the game, but the only way that it can be feasibly balanced and doesn't limit design space, right? So,
and if that was the problem, honestly, like, we're going to get off this topic right away here, but I think that they'd be more likely to just alter a character's kit. Like, if there was a serious problem where, for example, Ana's alt boost was deleterious to the game with another character that gets introduced down the road, you just change the boost, right? Like, they had to change the interaction between Mercy and Widowmaker several times because it was just so much damage and so critical to both teams to have a Mercy boosted Widow at all times. They just changed the abilities. They changed the numbers. They changed everything, right? Damage boost, body shot damage, everything, to get to a point where that felt good again. Rather than saying, well, there's no way to balance this, we're just going to retire Widowmaker, right? Like, they have a team of people designing this game that can solve those problems. So there's zero reason, I think, to suggest that you would just take a character out of the game. The worst possible case scenario, really, would be that you might design a second character that feels too similar to a first character, right? You get Soldier 77 down the road, and that feels bad.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
Call of Duty 5.
There are always two. They call it duty.
Sorry.
So I don't totally agree with that. There are definitely ways in certain interactions with certain heroes that if you try to limit that, it can make them unviable and means that they go straight back to the drawing board. And it means that a few synergies like that means that could go away. But mathematically, you would have to have so many more heroes that would need to happen with before you could get there. But it's there are a lot of ways. Right now with 21, 22 heroes, you're right. You can just, let's just tweak this and turn the knobs. As more heroes are introduced, knob tweaks become more, that they can become more drastic, even if they're by small percentage changes. Because you have a lot more synergies to be balancing. So,
yeah.
Sure. But really, truthfully, if they get to that point, once there's enough characters in the game, you also have to accept as fact that there will be weak characters. Like, right now, you kind of feel like there's a good, like, rock, paper, scissors rotational balance between the majority, but not all of the characters in the game. There are some that just can't be viable at a high level competitively because of reasons, right? Mobility or whatever else. But when there's 45 characters in the game, not all 45 of them are going to see play.
Yeah, I mean, look at League.
In a competitive scene, you'd be happy, thrilled to see half of them get played.
Yeah, just look at League and look at any Riot tournament you've seen. There's constant changes, just all the time changes, and characters that will never see competitive play. And it takes a patch where the developers say, okay, well, we're tired of this meta. We kind of want to switch it up. Let's switch the characters that we see in play. And I think that that'll probably be what happens down the line, but it's not going to be for a while. With the rate that they're going at, there's no need for them to introduce 30 characters in the next year. We've got a while before we even have to look at these comments on banning, retiring, you know, excluding all of that stuff. So it's so far down the line that I don't think it'll come up anytime soon.
If we just look to the immediate future, we're most likely seeing Mercy come back and Zenyatta being kind of put back on the bench as far as supports. From what I'm seeing, is that everyone else's impression too? I mean, that's
probably
that's
what it looks like.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, we are seeing that from Blizzard already.
Yeah, and you will. That's what's going to happen.
Right. Okay, let's move on because we have talked about a whole sack of nothing so far. Let's talk about one tournament, one article. Cool, 45 minutes later. Let's go ahead. So we have gotten multiple emails and comments saying, guys, what's going on with Sombra? What's going on with Sombra? I don't understand. But even...
No fun, Kevin, over here falling asleep.
Rude. So for the people who don't want to like sit down in the Sombra ARG Discord, which you're right is a snore fest, there's been actually a lot of exciting things. It's fun to read about. It's a little hard to catch up on. So this week, what we're going to do, what I'm going to do, because I got bored on my lunch today, so we're going to give you a Sombra recap in 3 minutes. So this is going to get you all caught up to where we are as of Thursday night, August 25th, about 9:50 p.m. in the Mountain Time. So 8:50 p.m. Pacific Time. This is the information that we have in the most condensed form that I can give it to you. Sound good? You guys can grab a drink of water, go to the bathroom if you want. You got 3 minutes. Ready?
Ooh. Yes.
I had to practice this. Breathing. All right, here we go.
This.
Ready? Here it goes. So, there have been whispers of Sombra and Overwatch for quite some time. The speculation began in Dorado when some folders with the name Sombra in Spanish, that's shadow, appeared, as well as computer systems displaying a Sombra protocol message. During this time, this was all we had. Some tried to correlate Sombra to the cloaked sniper we now know as Ana, but none of it was actually correlated, and we were based on assumptions that Blizzard couldn't or wouldn't tease two heroes or more simultaneously. New information from then on was non-existent until July 12th. Part 1. On July 12th, Ana was announced, and during the announcement video, a code was displayed for a single frame. When translated, it reads, "She who has the information has the power" in Spanish. Another frame had another code that translated to Sombra. 1 week later, a series of vertical barcodes were discovered during Jeff Kaplan's developer update announcing Ana. The community cracked the code, which was again in Spanish. Translated reads, "Was that easy? Well, now that I have your intention, allow me to make things much more difficult." All was quiet until the Summer Games video was announced on August 2nd, and in Tracer's slipstream was another cipher. To this day, the cipher hasn't been solved. Also, in the North American version of the Summer Games video, there were references to compass locations like north, east, southwest, etc. This became valuable later when deciphering the Volskaya datamosh, which we'll get to in a second. Recently, a photo was added to the Overwatch media page of the Dorado attacking spawn. This photo was datamoshed, which means it concealed a hidden message, which, while also taking on a distorted appearance. After some more clever deciphering by the community, a Spanish message was revealed when translated reads, "Why are you looking at the sky? This answer isn't over your heads, it's behind you. Sometimes you need to analyze your previous achievements." Naturally, the community went to view their achievements on playoverwatch.com and were met with a mystery achievement. When you viewed the source code, a Spanish message translate to "damn, sorry language, not bad. However, I'm getting bored. Let's try something new in the same direction. And then just this week, another datamash was revealed on Volskaya. Long story short, another translation. It seems to like these little games. Why don't we play a real one? In the last 72 hours, a thread on the Overwatch forums created by the user Skycoder mysteriously appeared. The thread had a unique behavior that it actually counted down to a time rather than noting the elapsed time. In the thread was a code. When translated, it reads, "I promised you a game. I believe you game detectives would call it a trailhead." Skipping past a few small parts, we're now at a point of having amomentincrime.com. Basically, the website seems to be uploading information to Active Omnix. At the time of the podcast, the page is at 5%. We don't know when, why the counter is going up, but it's going up very slowly. Whew. That was it. That was it. 3 minutes. Kevin's on his iPad.
I was eating popcorn.
I'm literally eating watching popcorn. Mean Girls instead of listening to that.
That's rude.
I'm so interested in the Sombra stuff, and it's so interesting to me. But at this point, I'm just so old. Like, I'm ready for a big part. Like, I feel like when the timer finishes counting down, it'll be big. But I'm just ready for that part.
It's been extended a little bit.
It seems like it's slowing down, this counter. Like, it got up to 3%, I think, yesterday, and now we're only at 5.
It went from 2 to 3 in the first 20 minutes, 3 or 4 in, like, the next 30 or 40 minutes, and then went to 5%, like, way later, and it hasn't changed since. So it's been going very slowly. For people who really like the world of Overwatch and are nerds and can actually decipher this stuff, this is actually really cool. And there's a lot of the community who really like doing this. There are some who are really upset. The thing is those aren't the people actually finding anything out. They're the ones sitting in their armchair going, "Why are you guys getting the information so slow? My name's Kevin." And obviously you're not going to find that interesting. But, in the end, it's really cool. It's a really immersive way to do it. I wish that they were doing it faster, but JR and I were sitting in the ARG Discord, and when the countdown timer got to zero on the forum post, there was over like 5,000 people on the server. It was awful. It was an awful experience, but it was also kind of cool to see so many people so excited about something so small is like another clue. I wish they'd go a little bit faster. I hope that they don't have too many steps after this, because the community is kind of tired of like, cool, you've given me a paragraph in Spanish so far and nothing else really super concrete.
People are definitely getting antsy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, it's been really fun, though. I watched a pretty long video explaining a lot of the technical stuff of it, and it was just really awesome to see, especially the image moshing, the data moshing, and how they figured that out, and how people were like, well, that image is corrupted. Well, let's open it up in the text editor and look at what's different between the original image and this image there. And so it was just really cool to see that. But Kevin, I know you're antsy to talk about this, so I'll leave you the floor.
Okay, so here's the thing, okay? Broadly speaking, John's making a face at me. I don't like
what
it. No,
doing, John?
Broadly speaking, I think the ARG itself is very cool. I think that what Blizzard has done and the cool puzzles they're building have been powerful, immersive, whatever. Mm-hmm. My issue with it is that as far as I'm concerned, if this was any other game and being announced in any other way, if this was Overwatch and they were just teasing this, but they didn't give you something to do, we would be lambasting this as the announcement of an announcement of an announcement. We've spent months waiting to hear about Sombra, and now people are losing their collective minds over a text file. Like, it's to the point where when it came out, when it started, I was interested too, because I was excited about what was coming next for a new character for Overwatch. And in the middle of it, we just got Ana out of nowhere, which was awesome, but I don't care anymore. Like, wake me up when Sombra comes out, because at this point, like John said, it's just taking too long. And the novelty of solving the puzzle wore off for me a long time ago.
Yeah, and right? What happens
if they
when
tease
they
this for
her?
Two more months, if we don't get Sombra till Christmas, I'm not even going to want to play her, because I'm just going to be so annoyed at the process. That's my position. on this whole thing.
When she comes out, it's going to be so overhyped that there's no way she's going to live up to the potential, and people are just going to be mad. So,
she does. She's wicked overpowered. Who knows? But
yeah,
right,
exactly.
It's actually a Warcraft 4 announcement.
Do you really think that people think because, we've been solving this puzzle for a while, that it's going to magically be a too powerful of character? Is that a legitimate thing?
Okay. That's not the argument at all. I'm just saying the time in which they've taken this announcement and dragged it out into all these different parts, if it weren't for the fact that it was an ARG, people would be enormously upset.
Yeah.
Now, I just have lost interest. When new stuff comes out, like, oh, there's a new part of the ARG. I'm like, is the character out? Have we solved it? Or is it just more, we have a new picture of a skull made out of at symbols. I don't care anymore. It's been too long.
I think it's awesome. It's better than nothing. I mean, if Sombra is coming out at the end of September, let's just say that's when she's coming out. We have an option of having nothing to do, not learning anything about Sombra, not being able, for some people who, like, when I'm hanging out and I can't be at my pleb console playing Overwatch, what I do is I check up on the ARG stuff. Like, this, that's okay. I don't have to invest my life into it or feel like, oh, wake me up when the show's over. Instead, all I have to do is go, oh, another piece of the puzzle for something that otherwise we would be waiting and not knowing when it's coming out. And sure, the surprise factor is great, but how much less of a story have they told over what they could be? How much more? And we've already talked about this so many times on the podcast. How many people are invested into the story of Overwatch without necessarily being invested into the game? And these are the types of things that they do. Now, it's an experiment. I think if they do it again, they probably don't make it as long. Or if they do, the carrots that they're dangling are more rewarding. Because right now it's like, cool, another sentence in Spanish that means nothing. So much so, well, and it's so ambiguous that people on Twitter went ahead and when the countdown hit zero, they went ahead and started changing
Twitter profiles.
They faked it, and it was kind of brilliant. But the people who've been working so hard, they must have been so mad.
So mad. Yeah. And that's, I guess that's a good illustration, right? Is I look at it and think, if at the end of that countdown we had gotten a teaser of a comic or the next comic for a different character that maybe had a clue in it and there was something going on that was actually accessible, right? It wasn't part of the ARG. It was just a teaser that everyone could see the shadow of this character or some information. Like, we would be close enough. But like, as JR points out in the chat, right? Even people who are doing the ARG actively are sitting around waiting because there's nothing going on. And I think that's the problem is that this has just gone on for too long. And the investment that people had in it is going to wear out, right? People's patience has worn thin with it. That's 100% my entire position on this whole thing.
Yeah, because I remember when the Summer Games video came out and there was the code in Tracer's jet stream there. That went on for, I don't know how long, that went on for a long time trying to figure out what exactly that code was. And that kept people busy for, I don't even know exactly how long, but it
no
was,
competitive
I want to say a week.
Mode right now. Let's just sit down and be nerds.
Give us unranked in the game between seasons at least, please.
It's true.
Yeah. Or don't take 3 weeks off. Or just don't take 3 weeks off.
That too.
Hopefully this brought you up to speed on the whole Sombra controversy. And we're going to talk about patch notes really quick, and then we've got a little discussion for you. We'll go ahead and call it a night. So patch notes, nothing super huge. Obviously, Eichenwald is on the patch, the PTR right now. We've got Season 2 on the PTR as well. Recently, we just saw changes to Hanzo and Soldier 76. Hanzo, basically, the changes previously left him a bit too strong, so they reduce the projectile size by 33%, so they're not as large as far as of a area that the arrows can hit. And then Soldier 76 bullet spread starts earlier but recovers faster, so it hurts his overall range but helps his effectiveness when bursting down opponents at that close to medium range. So that's kind of nice as well. Rosh, what are you taking on these changes?
I think that the Soldier one I'm kind of iffy about, but the Hanzo I think was literally perfect. Hanzo's in such a good spot now. They, with the previous changes and his hitbox increase, he was just a little too much. There is just no chance of really being able to dodge a Hanzo. I don't think that that needs to be a technical part of the game. I think that being able to dodge a Hanzo arrow should come in the player's skill. With the recent change to Hanzo and them decreasing the area that the arrow can hit, while you still can't really dodge a Hanzo arrow that's being shot at you after it's already been shot, you can outplay the Hanzo by strafing and trying to create an irregular pattern to still outmaneuver and not be in the position that they're trying to shoot for. And I think that that's what you need to go through in an FPS, especially a competitive FPS, which they're trying to do in the esports world. It needs to come down to players outplaying each other, not which character can outskill the other character. So it needs to be not a mechanical thing, but a skill thing, which I think is exactly where Hanzo is right now. Towards the soldier thing, I'm kind of like mixed on it. I always felt like Soldier was supposed to be a longer range kind of character. McCree was supposed to be kind of the medium range. So I kind of had mixed feelings on that. But I think if anything, his change was a subtle nerf to him, because while he recovers his bloom faster, that second that his bloom is kind of erratic when he very first starts shooting gives you the reaction time to get the heck out of dodge when he's shooting at you. So I think that that gives the players an ability to dodge the soldier while he's trying to control his bloom. So in my opinion, it's a slight nerf. Is it a huge nerf? No, he's still playable. He's still fine. He's in a perfect spot. He's the Call of Duty character that he was supposed to be in Overwatch. He's still fine. So both changes are good. I could see how people would complain about Soldier, but I can't see how anybody could complain about Hanzo.
Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead. Let's talk about our little segment doodad this week and bring it into it.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Hutta on.
Ready for battle.
Yes. So, Kevin, because you think that this is a deal, go ahead and take us away.
All right. So I think this is actually a very interesting topic of conversation. A little while back over on the XAM Network main site, Bruno Diaz wrote a piece, an opinion piece about voice communication in Overwatch. And he has lots of good things to say about the presence of voice in the game and the fact that it's built in as a default option for players. But his contention, and I think this is interesting, is that there's not necessarily a place for it in purely casual play, right? Whether that's quick play, solo play, that sort of thing. And I'm actually very interested in this topic, right? His thesis, such as it is this: voice and text chat in casual play is worse than useless. Your chances of having your experience worsened by it seem enormous compared to your chances of having it be useful. So my question to you guys this week is, what would you prefer to see done with voice and text chat in casual Overwatch, with the caveat that we're talking specifically about casual? Obviously, in competitive play, or if you're grouped with a party, you need voice, you want voice. In competitive, if you don't have a microphone, you still want text, right? Like, these are important communication tools to make strategies and plan. But for pure casual players, people who solo queue into non-competitive games, maybe they're on console and there is no text chat in the first place, is there a strong argument in favor of playing in silence or having chat disabled outright?
No, they should leave it.
I think there is.
Thank you guys so much for
think
being.
There is.
Just kidding.
Rude.
Sorry. Go ahead. I was trolling.
It's the internet. So the first rule of the internet is don't let your feelings get hurt, because there are going to be people on the internet who that's their literal purpose in life is to BM as many people as they possibly can on a video game and make them feel worthless. And that is how.
That's really sad, by the way.
It is, but is it not the truth?
But it's a fact of life.
Is it not the truth? Yeah. And so it's something that you need to accept on the internet. And me personally, I do a great job as a streamer and as someone he plays competitive, and just being a woman online, like, I do such a good job at not letting people get to me. But in competitive play with voice, I see the argument for not having a voice because sometimes it's so detrimental to people's mentality going into the game that if you have someone just flaming you the entire time, you are not performing, you are not doing as well. And then the next time you get into a match and you're all nervous and you're like, oh, I'm anxious and I feel like I'm not doing as well as I can. And it can disrupt your gameplay. And when the chances of you getting someone sour like that on your team way outweigh the chances of you getting an actual team that's supportive and wants to work with you, I can see the argument that, hey, the majority here hates team chat. Maybe we should give away to, or maybe it should be taken out or whatnot. But on the same hand, you can just not join team chat if you don't want to. And as a caveat, they added that you can disable chat. You can hide your chat too. So if you don't want to read what someone's saying, you can also hide your chat too. So if you just have someone being so toxic and you're that person who can't, like, you can't block that out. You can't block the BM out. You can't get past it. You can hide both, leave team chat, and you're fine. So I can see the arguments on both, and I can definitely see why people don't want team chat, but then again, just don't join it. So that's kind of where I stand on that.
I think what's interesting is there was another article recently about someone who basically tanked their rating in Overwatch to, I think they got down to one at one point. Yeah, they made it to one, but they noticed the lower you went down, the more toxic people are and the more, like, bent out of shape people are about not winning, which is kind of interesting. Maybe that kind of lends credence to maybe in quick match just getting rid of it all.
I mean, I will say, right, like, I am a competitive player in most games. I play most games at a fairly high level. Overwatch is not one of them, unfortunately. But it's just being honest, okay? But In most games, right, I really appreciate having the ability to coordinate strategies with my teammates. I like meeting new players through the game. I made a lot of new friends playing competitive Heroes of the Storm. I made a lot of new friends playing Hearthstone at a high level because you have good experiences because you've got a really interesting match with a player or against a player, and you appreciate that, and then you want to get to know them, and you chat, and you coordinate with them in future games. In Overwatch, at the level I play at, I'm not having those experiences. I am exclusively, when I use voice chat or when I'm looking at what's going by in text chat, because I've got them enabled right now, generally speaking, it's awful, right? The only time someone has something to say is when they're being rude, insulting, misogynistic, racist, take your pick, okay? And those experiences are bad for the game for two reasons, right? For one, it turns a large demographic of people off from the game, right? For whatever reason, because they're on the wrong end of that spectrum. For two, it means that someone who comes into the game new and isn't necessarily good at the game or the genre, that's the first exposure they're going to get to Overwatch, is people saying awful, terrible things to them or about them. And I can't imagine trying to sell somebody on Overwatch when that's the first experience they'll have. In competitive, I think you accept that as fact. I think when you go into competitive, that's the gameplay experience you have signed up for. But in a casual setting where you just want to log on, you know, console pleb or on PC, regardless, and you want to play a couple of games for fun in quick play by yourself, right? If you're not in a party, if you're not in a group, then there's really no reason, I don't think, for there to be pre-enabled chat. Like, I think it just lends people the ability to have a bad experience. And Blizzard, to their credit, achieved something really great with Hearthstone by not having any kind of chat built in. It's made the game way nicer to play because no one ever gets to say awful, hateful things to you or about you in the match. John's going to lose his mind here. No, he's not okay.
This is the worst argument I think that I have heard yet, Kev. And I feel like there's a couple things. Number one, just because you can't chat doesn't mean that Hearthstone isn't toxic AF. So you've got people who sit there and rope every turn to troll, spamming emotes, friend requests after. Trollers will always find a way to troll. Now, for pure interface and simplicity's sake, for Hearthstone, it makes sense. But at the end of the day, Blizzard really thrives on the community aspect of their games. And to now say that, oh, well, because your feelings might get hurt and you can't find the options, we're just going to turn this off for you or turn it off by default and people will never know that it's there. Trolls will always find a way to troll. They will always do it, whether it's a million May ice walls or it's somebody being a jerk in chat or somebody yelling at you. That's what mute buttons are for. You can remove the chat if you need to do it. You're still going to get teabagged. That's just how it does. You can't turn that feature off. So like, it's something that there's so much good and so many friendships and relationships that I've made meeting random people on the internet. When we played Fours and Halo, two of the guys were people that we met randomly and just had a great time in playing in an unranked capacity. Is that worth turning that off completely because somebody's feelings might get hurt? I totally disagree with that. I think that if you know as a gamer, you can't handle that. And you think that in the end, I would rather not have any interaction than have the potential of bad interactions with good interactions. I would encourage you, number one, I have anxiety. I have really bad social anxiety and I get that, but I recommend that you find a coping mechanism to deal with that or you turn it off. And you should know that going into the game. At the same time, like I don't see any world where it makes it better to turn it off by default. I don't see any world. I'm so passionate about this that I just think that in the end, it's got to be there. You have to give people the chance to make those relationships and build those friendships rather than worrying about the people who are always going to find a way to troll, always find the way to be a jerk. In the end, they get muted and ignored and it's no longer fun for them and whatever. But man, I can't say that I would agree with disabling voice chat at all in any of the game modes.
I think we're just coming at this from two very different places because I use the voice chat in the game. I appreciate the existence of the feature. If I don't want to use voice or I don't feel like hauling out this microphone and setting it up, I just have my voice disabled and I use text chat. But I recognize that there's a large number of people for whom this is a serious issue, right? Where their enjoyment of the game is affected by people who say terrible things or type terrible things or whatever. Well, but the expectation is that Blizzard has the ability to change how this works for the average casual player and make it so they don't have to have that decision. They don't have to have that discussion. Makes the game more accessible. Well, because the chat's on by default, right? That's literally, they could just disable it all by default and make it opt in instead of opt out in casual play instead of competitive.
That's like such bad design though. It's like taking,
is it?
You take a game to build community. Like one of the biggest pillars of Blizzard games is community. And you turn some of that off because some people are jerks. You completely vilify what they're doing, what they're standing for. And I think that's awful. I think we're better human beings than that. And we can overcome some jerks so that we can play a game together and really enjoy it.
I mean, I think that a lot of the points you're making are very salient. I think it makes complete sense that you should be able to send whispers to people, add people as friends from the scoreboard at the end of the game, like continue to have social relationships with players who you've had a positive experience with in the game. But I also recognize that I come from a very privileged place where I'm a, you know, 20-something white man. I have no reason to be upset by someone saying mean things to me on the internet ever. And no one's going to say mean things about me because I don't sound different. I don't whatever. Like the people that this affects
all the time.
I know. And I'm used to it.
I don't know about that.
I'm just saying like there's a disproportionate number of people whose voices aren't going to be heard about this because they aren't typical of the demographic. And it can be a huge turnoff to new players whose first exposure to the game is having that really awful experience. I have never in the history of introducing people to Hearthstone ever had somebody go, oh, it's super annoying that that guy used his emotes. Like, that's a totally different thing than someone getting in chat and being like, well, you I can't even say any of the things that I would say, because the first game I played of Overwatch, a guy got on voice chat and literally screamed at us. And if I repeated the things he said in voice chat right now, John would have to change the rating of this podcast from like PG to mature audiences
only. I
already
have to bleep one thing out, so.
I know. You'd have to bleep me for the next minute. Like, it's unreal the way people behave.
Did you mute him?
No, because I was in competitive and I was trying to coordinate with the guy. And I accepted that as what I had to deal with playing competitive. But there's definitely an argument from the other side. I don't think they're going to change it. I think that chat and voice are core features of the game and they're here to stay. But I totally understand why someone would argue that for a casual player, for the beginning of their initial exposure to the game, would not necessarily want those features enabled by default.
Understanding it for sure. I mean, obviously, any place where you can make a better experience for as many of your gamers as possible. But what we're talking about here is core game design and which features do you turn on and do you turn off? Throw something in the tutorial. Hey, you know, whatever, put a Junkrat up there and have him start yelling in your voice comms and be like, that guy's a jerk. Here's how you mute him.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Yeah. Like, I think there's a lot of ways to do it without just assuming that people are going to be awful. I hate that outlook.
Honestly, so do I, but I will be the first person to admit that when I play Heroes of the Storm, there is no voice chat in Heroes of the Storm. And if there were, I would turn it off instantly every time, because the way that people behave in those games is awful. And Overwatch, I've had a slightly more positive experience with, but not by enough that I trust the average person not to be evil in chat. And I mute and block people aggressively all the time. And I feel like I still have to do it every night, every time I log on to play. I have to mute and block people and report people for saying and doing things that it astonishes me that they've come out of a human being's mouth. Like, I'm always like, man, there's another person on the other side of that screen. And they're at
time is money, friends. And we're almost flat broke.
Like that. We got to get out of here. That's the bell. That's the bell. We got to stop. We got to move. So thank you guys so much for hanging out for episode number 37, right? Yep, that's the episode. Went a little, I don't know, we're right about on time this week. So good job. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Getting a little philosophical this week. We'll do that every once in a while. We got small patch notes stuff. There's not a whole lot to talk about there. So it's cool that there's still other things and other topics to talk about on the show. So let's go ahead and get out of here. But first, I think we've got some iTunes reviews, don't we, Jimmy?
That we do. In the US of A, we have Throwaway 102938 and Tyler JH7 with some really great 5-star reviews. Tyler JH7, though, this review is over the top. I love it, though. Here's the comment Tyler left for us. Have you ever heard of God? Well, even the Almighty gives a listen to the payload.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. So,
oh, my goodness.
That's great. And also Patreons. We've got a new Patreon. It's patreon.com/payloadpodcast. You can head on over there and check what it's all out. But Kev, any updates with the Patreon this week?
Nothing fancy new this week. We didn't get to welcome anybody into the payload family over on patreon.com/payloadpodcast this week. But this show is entirely supported by our fans. The whole production comes from you guys. If you like what we're doing and you want to become a part of the action, help us continue to improve the show, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Check out the individual rewards as well as the show milestones. Tell your friends. Even a couple of bucks here or there, if this is something that you really enjoy, means a lot to us and gives us the ability to do even more for you.
Yep, totally. And then let's do some shout outs for the week. Rosh, you're up.
Not too much today. The typical Fade to Karma, good gaming. And we also have a new sponsor called Nuts Bet, which you can go and you can bet on real Hearthstone players, just like betting on like poker players, which is pretty cool because it gives a unique facet to that. But also, I will be streaming after this. So at twitch.tv/okayitsrosh, you can check me out there. I will be playing on the PTR and playing some ranked. So I hope to see you guys there.
Awesome. What about you, Jimmy? What are you up to?
It's kind of come to the end of a lot of the Heroes Tournament, so I finally have a weekend completely off from casting. It's kind of nice. But the timing couldn't have come the worst time, because now all the pre-patch stuff for Warcraft is out, and I'm playing a lot of that. So that's Overwatch. I've been pretty much what I've been playing. But thanks everyone for your support for my casting stuff. I've been getting a lot of really good feedback on that, and I really appreciate that. And hopefully I'll be casting more events in the future.
Awesome. Kev, what about you, man?
Honestly, not a whole lot. The next week, I'm going to try to be around for the show, but I'm going to be doing it live on location from my my holiday. I'm taking a week off, finally, for the first time in like a year, taking a little short vacation. So I'll be trying to do both the payload and Well Met on the road. Honestly, my big shout out for this week is just emails. We have been lucky with this show in recent memory. There's been a great amount of stuff to talk about on the PTR. Competitive scene kind of got spicy for a little while there. But we love getting your emails, and it gives us ways to have cool new conversations about the topics that you guys want to hear about. So if you've got something particular that you would like to hear discussed on the show, send us your brief emails to thepayload@blizzpro.com. Let us know what you want us to talk about. And the more we hear from you, the more interesting this show will be back to you guys. We just want to do what our audience wants to hear. So let us know what that is.
Awesome. Woo. Well, as for me, I'm doing a lot of streaming still at twitch.tv/kickedtripod. I just hit my 50% goal for my TwitchCon goal. So that was exciting. So, yeah. As well as all my buttons are in different places. I'm not hitting them. Whatever. We'll just, that's the way the show rolls, guys. So yeah, I did that. Been playing a lot of Overwatch, both on console and PC. Been playing on the PTR quite a bit on PC, and then been playing with my little bro on console, so that's been fun. And obviously the Hearthstone stuff all going on right now, so there's a lot of that going on. Yeah, well, I think that's going to be it for us. You can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can also check out the guy who made our awesome music, Jake Buttonow, at jakebuttonow.ca. Go ahead and check him out. These are all free to listen to and download. You can get all this awesome music right on your iPhone, Android phone, PC, not your Xbox. I don't think they have SoundCloud. Do they have a SoundCloud on Xbox? I don't know, console pleb. And then, yeah, our logo, scythedesigns.com, for our logo. So big thanks to Dreadscythe there. You can find us on our Patreon at patreon.com/payloadpodcast and on Twitter at payloadpodcast. And of course, emails thepayload@blizzpro.com. We love your iTunes reviews. And that's going to be it. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcast. For myself, Rosh, Jimmy, and Kevin, this has been episode number 37. We'll see you guys next week. Bye. Bye. I'm hitting buttons. So many buttons to hit. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.